Support for Midwest Swing is brought to you by baseball.
The Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Chris Jimenez, and you're listening to Midwest Swing on the Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board!
Woo!
Everybody, we are back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. I am your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon_Warren. Midwest Swing can be found on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod, and we are part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network, which can be found on Twitter along with all our writing at Zone Coverage MN. Make sure you're checking out zonecoverage.com all the time. Get your Twins, Wild, Wolves, anything that we have in Minnesota sports, Gophers, Lynx, you name it, we keep you up to date. So make sure you check that out. Go to iTunes and make sure to give us a review. It's a very algorithm-based thing. So if you give us reviews, five-star reviews, it moves us up the rankings, gets us more listeners, and we can give you more shows. So check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, Libsyn, Google Play, anywhere you get your podcasts, and that'll be great. We have a very fun show for you today. We have Matt Trueblood of Baseball Prospectus on with us. Find him on Twitter at M.A. Trueblood. Matt, how's it going today?
It's going great. How are you?
I'm good. I understand you're coming to us from a caribou in somewhere in metropolitan Minneapolis. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Just a short walk up the street from work.
Okay, well, that's good. And so appreciate you taking some time out of your day. You know, we're obviously going to talk Cubs heavy here because that's kind of your specialty. But I did want to give you some credit, too. You've got a very terrific why can't I think of what to call it? Newsletter called Penning Bull that people can subscribe. I believe it goes for $11.11 per year, which is a bargain at twice the price. Where can people subscribe to that?
Actually, just visit penningbull.com, or if you do click on my profile on Twitter, it's my pinned tweet is a link right there.
So follow him, M.A. Trueblood on Twitter. Check out Penning Bull and put some bucks in his pocket. It's very fun. I especially enjoyed it during the postseason, but during this offseason, an offseason in which the Cubs have been fairly active, you can get some pretty good insights, not only about the Cubs, though, about everybody. And so we'll ask you a little bit about everybody, but how about let's dive into the Cubs here before we get too far down the road.
Sure, sounds great.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm coming up with four signings: Chatwood, C-Sheck, Morrow, and Smiley. Is that accurate?
Those are the big ones, yeah. There have been a few more on the periphery, including one that just broke about 5 minutes before we hopped on here, but they're minor league deals or, you know, kind of depth charges more than anything else.
Did they win the battle for G-Mon Choi, or what did I miss?
No, that one's still ongoing. No, they signed Ryan Weber, or Weber.
Okay, reliever, right?
Yep. Starter in theory, reliever in practice, you know, probably going to end up pitching in the rotation for the Iowa Cubs and waiting to see if he's needed, that kind of stuff.
So one of your 7th, 8th, 9th type starters, which is not insignificant on a team like this. They have added Tyler Chatwood, who MLB.com posts as their number 5 starter. I want to dive into him first. This is a team needing to replace Jake Arrieta, or at least needing to fortify this rotation. John Lester took a little bit of a step back. Hendricks, a little bit of a step back. Jose Quintana was very, very good. But as far as Chatwood is concerned, have you wrapped your mind around what they were thinking about when they signed him, and where, or how has your view of this signing evolved here over the last month or so?
Yeah, it's a really interesting signing, a sign of the times, I think. When the news of the signing first broke, I compared the deal loosely to a deal that the Cubs agreed to 10 years ago or 11 winters ago, with Jason Marquis. Mm. They signed him for a three-year deal as well. Marquis was young for being a free agent, just like Chatwood is. But he was also coming off a season where he'd lost his rotation spot down the stretch and, in fact, led the league in losses, or whatever that means. And, you know, it's a little, even adjusting for inflation, it's a little more than Marquis made. But what's striking is what it tells us about the way teams conceptualize pitching these days. Marquis, the Cubs signed back then because he was a guy who consistently turned in 200 inning seasons. He was very durable. He wasn't good, but right. He could take the ball and give you six innings every 5 days. Chatwood is nothing like that. He's a two-time Tommy John survivor, the first time in high school. And he's never eclipsed, I think, 158 innings pitched within a single season. But what he offers is the dynamism that so many teams look for these days in even back-end starters. They don't want a guy. They don't want to just be able to pencil in six crummy innings and hope you allow three runs instead of four that day. That's not what teams want from their starting rotation anymore. They'd prefer to have a guy who might dominate every now and then, who they can, you know, patch it in and fill in with either some bullpen games or spot starters if he gets hurt or if he struggles. And then come the playoffs, they want someone who can do what we just saw Charlie Morton do with the Astros this past fall.
Or Kenta Maeda.
Maybe transition to relief and dominate there over multiple innings. Maybe make some starts but be lifted after four frames two times through the order. One way or another, they want people who throw hard, who have multiple weapons, who, you know, fit some of the advanced scouting tools that we have. I don't necessarily want to call them metrics because really they assess what the person is doing physically. But Chatwood is more in that mold. It's just that we now pay those guys the way they used to pay low ceiling dudes like Jason Marquis.
So a couple things here. Obviously he's younger than anybody thinks. I think he's 27 or 28. Is it 28?
28 this season. Yeah. I think his birthday was sometime over the winter.
Okay. So younger than you think. Do you think there's any untapped potential still in him, even after those surgeries? And then the other thing is this. Keith Law mentioned that he thought, I think if I'm remembering correctly, he said if he can get back to the curveball that made him a prospect in the first place, that should help. Now, getting out of Colorado and moving to a curveball actually makes some sense to me. You know, where do you stand on that and his untapped potential that he might still have left?
Yeah, there are four pitches with Chatwood that really interest me. And that's one of the things is this guy's got a very deep arsenal. There were definitely times, especially when he was pitching at home for the Rockies, that he felt like he couldn't use the whole thing. His curveball is a pretty solid pitch, especially when he's using it away from Colorado. That contributed to the pretty numbers he had outside of Coors over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a very high spin rate on that pitch and on his four-seamer, which when it's on both of those two pitches, it tends to indicate that it's not so much just about maybe a grip manipulation, but about the natural way the ball comes out of the hand for him, which is, that's a great sign.
Now how stable are spin rates when you come back from Tommy John or anything? Or is that pretty stable no matter what?
Yeah, I haven't done that research. My sense is that you'll come out with essentially the same spin rate. It may be a while before you kind of hone the spin axis, and that's why your stuff can recover a little more quickly than your command.
Sure.
Things like that.
That makes sense. Yeah, we've seen that from a lot of guys, and one we'll talk about here in a second. Well, before I let you get back to Chatwood, is Drew Smyly. But anyway,
right.
Sorry. Back to your point about Chatwood.
Yeah. So. The curveball is obviously an intriguing pitch for him. It can be devastating. He can throw it in the zone for called strikes or have batters chase it out of the zone, depending on how he's setting things up. And I think it'll be interesting to see if the Cubs get him in and get him focused a little more on setting the pitch up well, using his four-seamer to set it up and change eye levels that way. So those two pitches are interesting just because of their basic attributes, the spin rates there. Then there's his changeup, which was not a big part of his arsenal until really the middle part of last year when he made some kind of adjustment. And truthfully, I haven't done the video analysis it's going to take to figure out exactly what that was.
Mm-hmm.
But he got a little more velocity separation between the change and the fastball.
Well, that's helpful.
Yeah, and he got a little bit more vertical drop on the pitch as well. It's always tailed, you know, pretty well to the arm side, but a little more drop and a little more of that velocity separation without a major change in arm speed. So he was inducing a lot of whiffs with that pitch. If that can keep up, and especially I think you can be more confident throwing any pitch that relies on its sink when you're not at Coors Field. So if he can make that stick, then that's going to be a big change for him as well. And then the final pitch to look at is the sinker, and that's just based on Chatwood's own observations. He felt like sinkers really have to move. That's you need a sinker to really run to the arm side if it's going to be an effective pitch. He felt like he couldn't get it to do that at Coors Field, and he did it better on the road. The numbers support that to some extent, just in that he threw it a lot more when he was on the road. But if he is able to have basically two different fastballs, his slider, which is a perfectly fine pitch in its own regard, and then the curve and change also working off of each other, suddenly there's a whole lot of upside there. And we'll see how many of those things they can actually make work and which things maybe Jim Hickey instructs Chatwood to just scrap so we can focus on the things that matter the most. But there's a lot to work with there at the very least.
Yeah, you mentioned Jim Hickey. I wanted to ask you, what do you think of the move from Chris Bosio to him, especially now with the familiarity between Hickey and Joe Maddon?
Well, I think, a big part of it is that Maddon has kind of, he's pulled off maybe a quiet palace coup over the last year or two, where when he joined the Cubs, Davey Martinez came with him from Tampa Bay, but basically the entire rest of the, but basically the entire rest of the coaching staff he inherited. It was the staff that Rick Renteria and even Dale Swaim had put together in consultation with the front office. At this point, most of the guys on the staff, there are a couple holdovers and a couple that have been promoted from within the organization, but you've got a lot more guys that Joe Maddon has known for a long time and is very comfortable with. And part of that is Hickey, and so part of Hickey's hiring is his relationship with Maddon. But I think another part is that this is a guy who has always been noted first for improving pitchers' changeups, working with mm-hmm. them to make that a viable part of their repertoire if it wasn't before. But secondly, for helping guys whose big problem, whose big shortcoming was command or control. The Cubs had a lot of pitchers who struggled in that area last year, especially in the bullpen. Exactly. And so Hickey's, I think they feel like they can hold on to a guy like Justin Wilson, improve and sort of eliminate the inconsistencies with a guy like Carl Edwards if they can get Hickey to work with them on the same things that he used to make Tampa's pitchers better at pounding the strike zone. And part of that is mechanical. Part of it is approach. Part of it is pitch selection, because a changeup's easier to get over the plate than a slider, for instance. Mm-hmm. But I think they do feel like he's going to be a big part of their attack. And there's, especially in the case of someone like Edwards, who's got this extremely dynamic cutter fastball thing, but it's hard to throw that for strikes. He needs to bring his delivery a little more under control, and that's something Hickey has excelled at over the years.
Well, that sounds like a really good marriage there. I want to ask you about Drew Smyly. He and Michael Pineda signed virtually identical contracts. I think Smiley's 3-7 for $10 million over the 2 years. I think Pineda's 2-8. So back-to-back days they signed. Do you prefer Smiley to Pineda? And just overall, what are your expectations for this contract? Because I think we're seeing two-year deals where teams don't want to pay guys to rehab for them and then pitch for someone else. And that's why these teams are taking these high upside flyers.
Yeah. There are pros and cons to each guy. And I think some of it just comes down to, do you think you can be the team that gets through to Michael Pineda and say with the message that you've got to stop make your mistakes over the middle of the plate, and you've got to stop being unwilling to give in when the count isn't favoring you.
Because the payoff there would be huge.
Yeah, Pineda's upside is enormous. He's better at missing bats than Smiley, despite the kind of long track record of injuries with him. Mm-hmm. If I had to bet on one of them staying healthy for, on the other side of Tommy John for a couple of really good years, I would bet on Pineda.
I would too.
I don't especially love Miley's delivery. Smiley's delivery.
Different lefty.
And his track record isn't that clean either.
No.
So the upside is higher with Pineda. Smiley made probably more sense for the Cubs because he's a guy who's going to have a better chance of hitting a sort of higher set floor mm-hmm. than Pineda probably will. And because, you have to use to inform your analysis that Hickey is right here and Madden's right here, and they worked with Smiley in the past. They clearly feel like, you know, they liked him when he was with them. They can work with him, you know, on the other side of this injury. So, yeah, I think there's pros and cons to each. If I was any random team, not one of the two who signed these two players, I'd probably prefer Pineda to Smiley, but each one probably signed the one that they're better off taking.
Sure. Wade Davis landed in Colorado, but the Cubs kind of fired the first salvo there with Steve Cishek and Brandon Morrow. First of all, do you prefer the allocation of assets into two arms? I suspect you do. Second of all, do you think the door was closed on Davis at any point beforehand, or did they just reach a point of where they didn't want to guarantee that much per year to one pitcher, especially a closer?
Yeah, with you know, in the past, I might have been inclined to say, well, no, the Cubs were never going to spend that much on a free agent reliever, just one guy. We've seen enough now that I'm just inclined to follow the reporting. And the reporting said they stayed in touch with Davis. They weren't opposed to the possibility of bringing him back, although I think they never thought they were going to be the team making the highest offer. Spreading it around makes a lot more sense. The Cubs had started the season last year with a whole lot of bullpen depth, but through some of the backward progress made by Hector Rondon and the injury issues that struck Koji Uehara, by the end of the season, they were almost short on arms. So it makes a little more sense to invest in deepening the bullpen, having more options that you know you can trust, and diversifying is a good way to put it, I think.
Were you surprised they non-tendered Rondon?
No. No, I think most people who followed the Cubs closely over the last couple of years aren't, which doesn't mean I don't love Rondon or think that he can find a lot of success in Houston, where mm-hmm. he ended up signing.
Right.
This stuff is there. I don't think he's mentally soft at all. I do think his confidence comes and goes a little bit. He's had some injury issues that he has pitched very nobly through and kind of battled to overcome, even though they weren't fundamentally his fault. Madden overused him for a stretch there, especially during 2016, and it kind of took his career off the tracks. Given the lack of trust that Madden had in him by the end and the specific kinds of issues he was having with the Cubs over 2017, it doesn't surprise me that they cut him loose, and it was probably the right decision, mm-hmm. but he could still, again, thrive elsewhere.
You see the makings of a pretty good bullpen, or at least the potential for one. I'm not sure that I would, bet my house on it or anything, but I can definitely see a path to a really good bullpen here. Do you think they're done adding arms, at least in terms of major league contracts?
I tend to, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you look at the depth chart right now, it goes Morrow and Edwards and Cishek and Strope. Justin Grimm is still there, and now he's out of options. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to find something to do with Eddie Butler, who's out of options now. He started for them over a stretch last year, but he could well end up in the bullpen. And then if you do end up signing a starter, you're going to have Mike Montgomery nudged out there. So, mm-hmm. yeah, they don't have a lot of space left. They could create some if they felt like they needed it. Maybe if they strike out on the starters that they're keeping the closest eye on, they could just go with Montgomery to start the year as the fifth starter. And then, yeah, maybe you add one more arm, but I tend to think they're done.
Are you satisfied with the center field project or prospect of Almora and Hop and maybe Hayward in the mix with Zobrist out in one of the corners? Does that satisfy you for now?
I think so. I think it's an interesting situation. There's a whole lot to like about Robert Almora and Ian Hap.
Right.
Their offensive profiles are sharply improving, and Hap's was already pretty impressive. Almora has the great instincts, and Hap has the great athleticism. Neither one really has the other at the moment, although it's not like Almora's slow-footed. He's just below average maybe for a center fielder. Defensively, I think they're going to have to figure out, they're going to have to make sure that they can trust both of those guys out there.
Right.
And that'll come with a little bit of experience for each. Offensively, there's plenty of upside, so you can kind of just roll with it. Last year they had John Jay and were able to put him out there. it'd probably be nice if they could pick up someone, and it doesn't have to be a guy with even Jay's offensive competency. The name that stands out to me a lot is Jerod Dyson, just because
he'd be a great
fan. Can have such a defensive impact. Yeah. But I don't think they're going to set aside a whole bunch of money to try and make that particular
thing
happen.
He can probably get more playing time somewhere too, I'm sure.
Right. I would tend to think so. So, yeah, like you said, it's going to be a mix and match of Happ and Almora and Hayward. But the overall picture should be good enough as long as they're confident that they're going to be able to position those guys well and instruct them well, and that Almora is going to just improve with experience.
If I forced you to make a guess right now, who makes the most starts for this team in left, center, and right field this year, respectively?
I think left will be Kyle Schwarber.
Okay.
He's undertaken such a project this offseason of improving his physique and being more athletically ready for left field.
He looked good at that Cubs, or at winter meetings.
Yeah, and being a full year removed from that knee injury, I'm not 100% sure that he was 100% healthy at any point in 2017 in terms of that knee. So I think he will improve defensively and offensively, and he's just going to be the left fielder. I think Hayward makes the most starts in right, although you're going to see Zobrist play more out there as Baez takes a firm hold on second base as long as Addison Russell's still at shortstop. This is how things move in the Cubs organization. And then in center, probably the bulk of this, like the plurality, though probably not the majority, will go to Almora, I would think.
Okay, so like a 40, 35, 20 or something between those three guys? Nothing?
Yeah, something in that vein.
So hot hand matchups, handedness. That makes sense to me. I don't want to bury the lead here, but we got to talk about the Yu Darvish fight that your team and the team here are at least internally having. How do you feel about the Cubs' pursuit of Yu Darvish, and do you really think the Twins have a chance in this one?
Yeah, it's interesting. I know the Cubs didn't come into the offseason thinking this was a way they would want to spend their money.
Well, it's kind of amazing. All the teams trying to get under the luxury tax threshold means that like the big spenders aren't necessarily being talked about. Now, John Heyman's quote-unquote mystery team could swoop in here and give him a six-year deal for $150 million or whatever. But right now, it seems like the Twins are firmly in the thick of things, as are the Cubs.
Yeah, I think it's... There are these rumors now that the Yankees could get involved, but to me, I expect it to come down to the Cubs, the Astros, and the Twins.
What a world. What a world.
Yeah, exactly. My instinct says if that's what happens, he'll probably land with the Cubs, just because the way this winter's working out, it doesn't seem like Alex Cobb is willing to drop his price tag to the team to the extent the team's expected him to.
Right.
And Darvish is a better pitcher, so if he only costs a little more, you just sign him. And I think the Cubs are, for all kinds of reasons, just the way the front office sells this team, the resources they have, the chance they offer to for sure win right away, I think they have a leg up. But, any of the three could really use him. The Twins are the team, to me, that could use him the very most, just not only because they have the greatest need in the rotation, of course, but because they're at this point where the extra money is just money to them. And I know it's never just money with the Bullheads. Like, I've lived here long enough to understand that, but they're not in danger of going over the luxury tax anytime soon.
No, and they're only committed money, to like $28 million next year, which is less than a lot of teams.
Right. And so they should be willing to open the pocketbook if they think this is the guy. And there are a lot of reasons to think this is the guy. So, I think there's a decent chance that he falls into the Twins' lap. And if he does it, it makes a huge difference for that team.
Well, I think they got to get out in front of spending. It'd be easy for them to spend next offseason when they only have 20-whatever million plus arbitration committed. But, yeah, good luck nudging out teams that are jilted by Manny Machado and Bryce Harper and decide they want to throw a bunch of money at Dallas Keuchel and Garrett Richards. So spend while the opportunity is there on something that's worth it. Now, with that said, if the Twins miss out on Darvish, you have to feel pretty good about their chances of landing one of the other three guys, right? I mean, everyone's talking about Arrieta, Cobb, and I know you don't like Lance Lynn, but he's in that mix. The Twins have to probably land one of those three guys, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think they have to at least be trying to.
Yeah. And not like New York Mets we tried.
Right, exactly. I think the I do see a big difference between who Darvish and Cobb are and who Lynn is at this point. And I think you're going to find that Lynn's market is, although at a lower price, it's almost going to be wider and more varied, just because he is that sort of old school Jason Marquis type where, you know, you can sign him up and get a whole bunch of innings.
Mm-hmm.
And that just appeals to more teams, not only the teams that are contending or hoping or planning to go to the playoffs. Every team can use that kind of steady stabilizing force in their rotation.
I mean, he's getting 4.60 probably, right?
I think that's a fair estimate.
Okay.
I probably would have guessed higher before the freeze that we're all trapped in.
Yeah.
Arrieta's a tricky fit for the Twins. I wouldn't expect to see that. But
what's he
going to
get?
Darvish,
maybe 3.75 for Arrieta?
I don't expect Scott. I never bet against Scott Boras that way.
True.
I think he's going to get a 4 or 5 year deal, and it's going to be
100 million
into
plus.
Six figures either way. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
more than six figures.
Yeah.
Nine
yeah.
figures.
Right. But yeah, I think the Twins, they should have a serious focus on this. I talk about this, and it's not especially popular at family gatherings, but I have a sense that the Twins are heading into a really good 2 year window.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they can't succeed after that, of course, but after that, you're going to be up against the White Sox having seen their farm system bloom in full. And
no,
you're going to see the Tigers.
They don't do the Royals thing where it takes 4 or 5 years to take hold.
Right, right.
But
for
it could be faster because these guys are close. These guys are all really close.
They are. And so you've kind of got this window where the Indians are starting to wind down. They're probably going to win the division this year, but I don't think there are any guarantees about 2019.
There won't be 10 games again if things go the way they have.
Right. And so, you know, the Royals are going to be out of commission, I think, for a while, but the Tigers are going to come faster than people think. So if I'm the Twins, I want to make the playoffs both of the next two seasons. And if I'm trying to do that, I need a better starting pitcher, someone to nudge somebody off the back end of this rotation.
So if it's you, it's Darvish or Cobb or bust, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, Arrieta would interest me, but I think probably doesn't fit the Twins incredibly well.
They need a third. Well, although if it's going to be that shorter window and they actually agree with that, maybe it would. But also, though, you need a third pitcher so that you can go into a postseason with a fighting chance or a punching chance of winning, basically, right? A 1-2-3?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think the Twins would have liked to shop in kind of the Tyler Chatwood section of the market.
Mike Minor, maybe.
Right. But those guys got gobbled up, and what's left is not as dynamic. So at this point, you should be aiming for someone who, honestly, given what you and I both expect from Irvin Santana this coming year.
Right, yeah. Stem the tide.
You want someone who can be at least as good as Jose Berríos and bump Santana down to, like, the third spot in that playoff rotation.
Yeah, right. That would be ideal. Got a couple minutes left before we let you go. Are you putting any stock in the idea the Cubs could get Manny Machado?
Not at this moment. I will say I've kind of rolled it over so much, and something we haven't even touched on here, but when the Miguel Sano thing hit, something clicked for me that teams these days have to be so wary of, because to win, you have to invest yourself deeply in great players who are young and controllable, right?
Right.
But you also don't want those players to turn out to be bad guys who you'll lose to suspension, who will hurt your team, who will divide your clubhouse, who will do any number of different things, and who will eventually have dented trade value. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that Addison Russell, who I don't set a lot of store in the very sort of spurious domestic violence allegations that surfaced against him last summer,
mm-hmm.
but the messy divorce he had and the general lack of discipline that the team has been concerned about from him, the fact that his name keeps coming up in these Machado rumors, if the Cubs made a trade that was centered around Russell and didn't include someone else important from their major league roster for Machado, it would signal to me not that the Cubs are stupid, but that the Cubs are thinking about the big picture and maybe that Addison Russell isn't the guy. You know, you're trading 4 years of Russell for 1 year of Machado, but maybe all 4 years of the Russell, the Cubs don't expect to go that particularly well.
Sure.
So I'm not entirely closing the door to it the way I was inclined to at first, but mm-hmm. I just don't think they're the right fit.
What move did you like the most, non-Cubs, this offseason?
Whew. There have been so many.
No, yeah, I know. I've heard that. Yeah, that's true. There have been seven moves so far this offseason. Seven.
Yeah.
So pick one of the seven, right?
Yeah, it's so weird and ugly.
I'm kind of putting you on the spot here. I understand that. I didn't let you prepare for this.
I mean, I'm going to set aside the obvious two. The Stanton deal, which the Yankees were put in a position to make because of mm-hmm. factors beyond their control.
Right.
And then they just happened to make a very good deal.
Yeah.
And the Ohtani deal, which is a whole separate animal.
That was a layup.
Yeah. I'm going to say I really like the Angels signing Zach Cozart to
mm-hmm.
to play third base. I buy his offensive breakout. People talk way too much over the month or so that he was a free agent about it being he just suddenly popped up in 2017 and did this. No, that started in 2016, and he just happened to get hurt, and so his 2016 season was truncated. Now, he was hurt again in 17. Mm-hmm. Injury problems are a real concern for him.
That defense
but he's
going to
be
amazing, though.
Yeah, you've just sewn up the left side of the infield, sewed it shut.
Yep, and Kinsler's not too bad at second either.
No, and so, yeah, the Angels' entire offseason, to me, is brilliant.
Okay, how about the one you've liked the least?
I guess I'm going to go with Brian Shaw.
Build a bullpen workshop, man.
I don't object to the prices that the Rockies paid because – to me, the reason the Rockies are paying those prices is because the Rockies have to pay more than the market price to bring in any pitcher,
yep.
even if it's a reliever. So they've just decided to do that. And in principle, I don't have a problem with that. I think that it's kind of smart that they've recognized we're just going to have to pay a little more than the market price. Okay. There are two problems. One, their offense is still broken.
Right.
And to me, their rotation, while young and sort of hipsterish, is not steady either.
Yeah, like a Senzatella and all those guys. Whatever.
Right. You've gone too far down what should be your priority list before you started throwing your resources at something.
Yeah.
And the second problem is that Shaw has been pitching so much for so long that I just think he's due to break down any moment. If he doesn't, if he's really just that rubber arm guy, then good. But I also am not as sold as some are on the transition of his skill set to Coors Field.
He doesn't really have the build of a guy that's going to be a rubber arm guy either, I don't think.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of weird that he's been as durable as he's been. Yeah. Now, again, I'm not going to totally rule out that, you know, if they have health records and, you know, have studied it closely and just think he's going to hold up, that's better. But as much money as they've thrown at their bullpen, I don't think they got three guys that I completely trust to hold up, but none of them do I completely trust to deliver a lot of value. And that's not even where they should have been spending their money in the first place.
All right, last thing, I'm going to let you go here, but do any of these NL Central teams worry you at this point, or is it Cubs, Cubs, Cubs?
I think the Cardinals can, in theory, catch the Cubs. The Brewers are going to face just what the Twins are going to face this coming season, where they are a young team, they are fundamentally on the rise. But that doesn't mean that their big elastic stretch from the previous year up to what they were this past year won't bring them pulling back a little toward the middle of the pack. So they're going to have to overcome that. And they're, you know, maybe just because they are a little more focused on the future, I'm not as sure that they're going to make the moves that let them nudge a little forward that the Twins will make. But the Cardinals, I like the Marcelo Ozuna move. Mm-hmm. I get what they're doing with their pitching, although it's not yet exactly firmed up. But yeah, the Cardinals, to me, still have one or two big things left on the table if they want to pull the trigger on them this winter. And if they do, it'll be a really interesting NL Central again.
All right, well, Matt, thank you for the time. Follow MA True Blood, subscribe to Penning Bull, and you've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network.